Hello, I am Paige Albiniak, Editorial Director at Promax, and this is the Daily Brief Podcast. Today, I'm talking to Cecilia Gorman. She's a veteran of the advertising industry, where she spent 20-plus years in production, recruiting, and human resources. She has spent the bulk of her career at Y&R Advertising, where she was VP Creative Services. She led global creative operations at Oakley and was head of HR and training as VP Organizational Leadership at InOcean USA. In addition, she's executive director with the John Maxwell team and the owner of Creative Plus Talent Plus Partners, a training consultancy that specializes in the development of new and struggling managers and the teams they lead. She's also the co-founder of Empowership, a year-long training and mentorship program designed exclusively for women. On February 22nd, Promax is thrilled to have Cecilia come and lead Promax members in the first session of our new Transition Assistance Program, aka TAP. We created TAP to help our members who are going through a transition in their careers and are looking for ways to take themselves to the next level. Hello, Cecilia. Welcome to the podcast, and thank you so much for being here.
Hello, hello. Happy to be here.
Just to kick us off, why don't you give me a little background? I read your background on the open that you did not hear, but why don't you give me a little background on how you got to where you are today?
Oh, gosh. Well, that's a long story. I'll give you the clip of it. My career was spent down in Orange County in California in the advertising industry. So I was always in creative environments, working on creative products, just loved it. I got into creative recruiting. So I started to do a lot of work soliciting art directors and copywriters to come work at the agency I was at. And in the course of that, I started speaking at colleges and trying to get students interested in advertising. And through the exposure that I had, having the platform to speak and doing career coaching at that level, I fell in love with it. And I was like, how can I do more of this all day long? And so I moved from an agency. I went client side. I worked at Oakley for a while and I worked on their creative operations. And at Oakley, I had the chance to get a little bit more involved in training and development, did some onboarding. I did some peer-to-peer manager training programs and just really thought this is what I want to do for a living. So my final job in the ad industry was a formal training and development job. I was at an ad agency, and it finally gave me the courage to say, I want to do this on my own. So Creative Talent Partners is my company, and we're a consultancy that does training and development for creatively minded companies, and just having a blast with it.
So what is it about training and development that you love so much?
Oh my gosh. I love it so much is because I always put myself in other people's shoes. And when I was just starting out and not having a clue of the direction I wanted to go or what I wanted to be when I grew up or the struggle I had when I became a new manager, not having a playbook, not knowing how to respond in certain situations. So I always feel myself in other people's career struggles. And I want to be that person for them that could help either, you know, give them some new information or give them a different perspective or point them in a direction that maybe they hadn't thought about. So it's just empathy. It's really empathy and knowing that everybody has this great future out there. And sometimes all you need is just a little bit of a tweak to get there.
So funny, because as you, right before you said empathy, I wrote down empathy. So
we're
empathetically on the same page.
Yeah.
How do you feel that empathy serves you as you work with these people, because you can sort of feel how they are and guide them accordingly?
I think so. And I think a lot of times we get heads down in our careers and we get into the, like, what do I have to get done today? It becomes a very tactical groundhog day. And the next thing you know, you wake up, it's 5 years later and you're kind of not happy, but you don't really know why. And so what I like to do is just help people lift their heads up a little bit and look around and to see, you know, maybe they're doing some things that are getting in their own way. Maybe they have some untapped potential that they're not realizing at that moment. And they just need someone outside of their blinders to help guide them.
So let's dig into that. So when people are head down in the day-to-day tactical pieces of their career, which I can definitely relate to, what kinds of things do you give them to help them get their head up and just carve out a little time to maybe just sort of see their map a little bit better?
Well, I think there's two things. The first is I always, always focus on, whether it's in a training program or in a coaching regimen, we always start with talking about self-awareness and bringing some reality around your current circumstances. A lot of times leaders will start to flail because they don't have the self-awareness they need to understand what's holding them back. A lot of times people who are new managers or individual contributors that are just giving their start, they don't even know what self-awareness is. they're just trying to do their job. And so
that's really so many of us. Though.
Yeah. Like self-awareness, what the heck is that? Well, the interesting thing is that there's a survey done. I want to say IBM did. It was back in 2010. Don't quote me on that. But the outcome of it is what's really important is they asked Fortune 500 executives, what's the number one thing that contributed to your success? And you would think Fortune 500 companies, they're going to say business acumen. They're going to say financial savviness. They're going to say my strategic vision. The number one thing that these executives reported back that led to their success was a higher level of self-awareness. So that was them figuring out, what am I doing good? What are my strength zones? How can I do more of that? And what's getting in my way? What are my career limiting behaviors that I need to adjust to get better? And so self-awareness is the first thing. The second thing is I always want to get people to reflect on how they're doing. And I think that's the part of the heads down day to day that we forget about. We forget to say, how did today go? Or, how am I doing as a manager? Or how'd that conversation go? Or that meeting with that big client? We forget the reflection part of it. And in reflection, that's where we can get some insight, and that's where we can figure out how we need to adjust and optimize our behaviors.
So self-awareness and also the ability to assess how you're doing, why are those two things so important to move you along in your career?
They're so important because I think what happens with people is they think their boss is responsible for their career. They think HR is responsible for that promotion. They're waiting for someone else to pull their career forward, when in fact, the employee themselves is the one who should be pushing it forward. And so when I get more self-aware on my own, when I reflect on my own, I can speed up the trajectory of my career. If I'm the one pushing things forward, if I'm pushing my own development forward, if I'm discovering what's holding me back, of course you're going to get some feedback at some point, but it won't be fast enough, and it often won't be as direct enough as you're going to need to move your career forward at a clip. So if you want to get better faster, you've got to be doing this self-reflection, self-awareness piece.
So once you do that piece, what kinds of steps do you recommend people take in order to move things forward? And just a side note, this idea of you are responsible for your own career has been a through line of podcasts I've done recently. So it's interesting.
But good.
What are sort of the tangible steps people take to?
Well, I'll tell you, there's one very easy, simple, hard-hitting exercise you could do. And it's so simple, you're going to be like, duh, but it's also people don't do it. And the one thing is, what do I need to stop doing? Actually write it down. What is holding me back? What is my career limiting behavior? What is the one thing that if I quit doing it today would make the biggest impact on my performance or my communication or my management? So to capture that career limiting behavior, and then to do the opposite and say, hey, what's one thing that I really do well? What's my superpower? What's my skill? And in those two questions, I think you're going to get some guardrails around how you can be driving your career forward. But if you don't get to something so simple that it's those two things, you're going to have a hard time moving yourself forward. You're going to have a hard time figuring out what that is. So sometimes we need to get really, really simple to get really, really clear.
So in the little pre-conversation we had before the podcast, you talked about personal branding, and it seems like when you talk about having those guardrails on, but that's sort of about the parameters of your personal brand. Am I on the right track?
Oh, absolutely. And so the question I ask, so connecting those two things, the question I ask is, how do you want to show up? So this could be as, how do you want to show up as the leader of a team of 100 people? How do you want to show up as a new manager and this is your first time managing people? How do you want to show up online at representing your personal brand? So what goes after the how do you want to show up is going to be unique to whoever the person is. But when you figure out how you want to show up, that's where your guardrails are. So one of the exercises I do in my manager training, in my coaching program, is I'll have people take out a pen and paper, and I want you to write five things you always want to be. And in this case, we'll say as a manager, five things you always want to be as a manager. Well, I want to be supportive. I want to be encouraging. I want to be positive. I want to be direct. I want to be fun. Okay, whatever those adjectives are for you. And then you also say, what are five things you don't want to be as a manager? Well, I don't want to be a micromanager. I don't want to be a jerk. I don't want to be, you know, negative. I don't want to be a backstabber. I don't want to be whatever. And once you decide what you don't want to be and what you do want to be, then you can lead into how do you want to show up. And that's where I think the reflection piece comes in so well, because I can drive home at the end of the workday and I can say, how did I show up today? Was I positive? Was I supportive? What is that? Was I upbeat? Was I fun? Was I those things that I said I always want to be as a manager or as a producer or as a creative, as a whatever, fill in as a mom. I mean, honestly, you can fill in the blank with whatever thing that you're trying to be, but how did you live into that? And I think that has so much to do with the personal brand that you're crafting.
It's interesting because I'm thinking you come up with a personal brand or you just really know yourself well, but you basically take all of that, put it into a construct and then project it onto the world, even though it's probably who you already are, but it's putting it into something that you can put out there and be clear about.
Engage yourself on. And so here's the thing. We know a lot of things about ourselves in our head. Like, and that's usually where all the descriptions about our strengths and weaknesses stay in our head. The second you write it down and you say, I'm going to put to paper the five things I never want to be as an employee or as a coworker, as a boss, as a parent. As soon as you put that on paper, the reality goes into that. And you can see now what those guardrails are. Whereas when they're in your head, they're kind of fluffy, yeah. And maybe they're not so firm against them. But I have a gentleman that I coach that has written those five things down on a post-it, and that post-it resides on his keyboard. And he took a picture of it, and it's his screensaver on his phone.
I thought you were going to say it's his tattoo.
Yeah. He has not gone that far. But it's a reminder to him, because he's the highest creative in this department. It's a reminder to him. I said I wanted to show up in these ways. How am I doing today?
So you specifically focus on creatives. What would you say are some of the challenges that creatives face as they head into leadership roles?
I think the biggest challenge for creative leaders is that oftentimes, I won't say all the time, but I'm going to say most of the time, people in creative departments are promoted because they're good creatives, they're good writers, they're good producers, they're good art directors, they're good designers. They're very good at their craft. And when you're good at your craft, you get recognition, you get awards, the accolades, you get more challenging projects, and you also get promoted. And what happens is if that happens to you enough, and you're so good at your craft, sometimes that comes at the expense of being a good people person, being a good people leader. So it is oftentimes creative leaders struggle with people skills. And they've risen so high that now has an impact on their success and the team's success, because they're up there because they were good at doing their thing. And their thing might not be dealing with people. And leadership all day, every day is going to be about people.
That always cracks me up because, again, on the writing side, but I've definitely had managers who came up because they were great journalists. And I mean, honestly, the skills that it takes to be a great journalist are almost the opposite of the skills it takes to be a great manager. So invariably, that's a struggle. But so I'm sure that's true I'm not sure that's true, but I can see where that would be true if you are a graphic designer or a motion graphic designer where you're in an edit bay all day long. Why would that mean that you can then go manage the needs of your people?
Yeah. And I think it's no, through no fault of their own, right?
No,
I mean, I think that's why I focus a good portion of my business on new managers, because when I became a new manager, no one told me anything. No one gave me a manual. No one gave me a how-to book. They're like, here's your team. Have a go. See you later. And nobody gets fundamental training on people management skills. But the thing that I want to make sure we're like broadcasting out to the world is this stuff can be learned. Just because you're an introvert or you're not comfortable around people or you're more comfortable in your craft, it doesn't mean you can't learn how to lead people in a way that's authentic to you. We just aren't showing people how.
Right. I'm going to do a little sidetrack question, which going back to when you were talking about your background and you worked for these different companies and then you finally launched on your own. How was the decision to launch on your own and how scary was that?
I think that's a whole nother hour long podcast, right? I never thought I could go out on my own. I mean, I needed paycheck. I needed insurance. Yeah. I needed stability. I just never even thought I had the mindset, mind frame for it. And maybe even some days still, I doubt that. But I knew that my strength and my gift would be better served if I could figure out a way to do it on my own. That the job I had was only letting me do that strength every once in a while. And I wanted to do it all the time. And so I came to a crossroads, and it was continue doing this and not feeling totally fulfilled. I wake up 10 years later and feel a little mad about how you've spent 10 years, or make the leap, figure it out. And if you fail, you fail. And if you don't, it's going to be amazing. You know, so it was a courageous leap that was clouded in being really naive about it, but it made me do it.
I think you said this already, but what do you consider to be your strength?
I just really care about people loving their job and loving what they're doing. And so if anyone is not under those circumstances, I want to figure that out for them. And if it's because their own inabilities and their own leadership skills are lacking, then I want to give them some tools to make that better. If it's because they're stuck in the wrong job, well, then I want to give them some perspective on how they can make that job better or find a path to a different one. So it's a sense of wanting to help people, but also wanting to give them that feeling of you're in the best job. That is the best fit for you. Everybody should feel that.
I agree. And that sounds amazing, just to respond to that. But what do you find is the hardest thing for people to do, or are the hardest things for people to do when they're either suddenly find themselves without employment, or they're finding themselves in a situation where they're not satisfied and they're wanting to make a change? What's the thing that hangs them up from getting started?
So let's start with you're looking for a job. So maybe you've been transitioned out, or you lost your job, or you don't have a job at this moment. I think what happens is people get paralyzed by wanting everything to be perfect. So they'll say, oh, my resume is not updated, or it doesn't look the way I want it to look, or my cousin told me that I should say this differently. And they'll get paralyzed because they think that their resume or their LinkedIn isn't perfect. And so they don't want to reach out to anyone because they're afraid that it doesn't look the right way, versus seeing the resume and the LinkedIn profile as a living, breathing, evolving thing. You're never going to be done with your LinkedIn profile. I literally will change my headline like once every 3 months. Like, I don't want to be called a motivational speaker anymore. I want to be called a public speaker. You know, like, right. I'll tweak little words and kind of float them out there. So I think that paralyzation, it's perfectionism showing up as paralyzation, which manifests as procrastination. So all of those things get linked. And then on the other side of that, if I'm in a job and I'm not feeling fulfilled, or I don't think it's the right fit, or I want to change industries, or I know I want to make a move, it's fear. I won't say it's just fear. Take the just out of it. It is fear. You've mm-hmm. got a paycheck. You've got benefits. You've got stability. You've got familiarity. And any change is uncomfortable. There's mm-hmm. there's loss. There's oftentimes grief of what you had. Oh my God, I had that. Now I don't. I miss my friends, or my commute is so easy, or they're so flexible when my kids get sick. There's so many reasons we can convince ourselves that we can't make a change. And I think that's why a lot of people will stay where they're at for extended periods of time.
What's the first thing you try to get people to do if they are paralyzed by perfectionism, or if they are also paralyzed by fear? What's sort of the first thing you do to get them running?
Well, let me think about if it's the same for both. But for procrastination, for instance, I was on the phone with somebody today, and it's just do one thing, just one thing. And mm-hmm. even if that one thing is so small, you could do it in 5 minutes, just do the one thing. So it's one small step. So for her, I told her she had to adjust the headline on her LinkedIn by today. And so just crafting some words, she has to put some thought into it, but just one thing, right? So I think oftentimes we think we have to have every step lined up, or they have to be big steps. so we won't take any step.
Right, right.
When you go, what is the smallest thing you could possibly do? And even to, I trick myself with this just about like fitness. If I like to run and sometimes I get totally just a mental block on running. So I'll say, what's the smallest thing I can do? Well, I can go walk to the mailbox and back. Okay. That's my to-do for today. I'm going to walk.
I was like, back it up. You can put your shoes on.
Yep. So there's very small steps that you can take to get you to a goal. I think that helps you work through procrastination because you've got a little win and a little win adds to another little win, gets you to momentum, gets you to movement, gets right. some things flowing. Now for fear, I don't know. And that one's really tough.
I think it's sort of the same though, don't you? I think procrastination is oftentimes caused because of fear.
Yeah. Yeah. And also I think people think that their job is the be all end all for every happiness they want in their life. And if they don't get it all in their job, then there's nothing else they're going to do. Like for instance, there was a time when I was working that I said, I want to speak more. I want to have a platform. I want to do public speaking. I want to do presentations. And in that particular job at that particular place, it just wasn't going to happen. It just, the opportunity wasn't there. And so I said, well, where can I do this outside of work? And then that's when I found a job teaching part-time at an art school. And so then I wasn't relying just on my job to make me happy in every avenue. It was, where else can I do this thing that I want to do? And ultimately it gave me some credibility in the space. It certainly gave me practice being a speaker and that ultimately helped me land where I wanted to go. But I wasn't relying just on my job to fulfill all that for me.
I wonder what the percentage of people are who say, I want to do more public speaking. I feel like it's a very small percentage of people.
You're probably right, which is...
I don't know. Everyone I know is like, I'm avoiding this like the plague, but...
I know. For me, that was just where when I was happiest was when I was teaching. So maybe it's not just speaking, but it was teaching as well. Where else can I teach people? I want to share with people. So it could be, where else besides your job can you do this? It could be take a small step in your job. So some people will say, I'm so busy at my job, there's just no way I could network to get into this other industry I want to get in. Well, actually, if you think about it, I'm sure you could eke out 15 minutes a week to do some reach out on LinkedIn. Like if you really want it, you're going to figure it out. I was listening to this guy talking about... you know, going after your dreams. And he says, your dreams dictate what time you wake up in the morning. Your dreams dictate how much sleep you get. And I thought it was interesting because we'll say we want something, but then we put all sorts of conditions around it. Well, we want it, but you know, can it just, I don't want to have to get up at 5 a.m. for that. I'll say I want to be more fit, or I'll say I want to get my master's, but I don't want to have to get up early for that. I don't have to stay late, or I don't have to do time on my weekend for that. So we put conditions around it. But when I think if you have fear and your fear is stopping you from doing something, I think you could carve out some time somewhere to make progress without actually having to quit your job to make that progress.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a brutal truth, but yes. One of the things I think that people, you know, you're always recommended to do, and I think people have a hard time doing it, is networking. What are your thoughts on networking? How much do you coach toward networking? Do you think it's something important to do?
So yes, yes, and yes. Okay. So I think what we need to do is we need to change what we immediately think of when we think of networking. We think of going after work to an event that we don't really want to be at with people we don't know, and it's a waste of our time, and it's taking us away from our family or the things that we want to do. That's what we think of networking as. We've got to flip that and think of it. It's a vehicle to get you the opportunities that you want to have in your life. It's a vehicle, and you need to make use of it. However you make use of it is going to be up to you. So there's an incredible amount of networking you can do without ever, you know, leaving your desk, leaving your house. There's so much networking you can do on LinkedIn, making connections, starting conversations, setting up calls, you know, having one-on-one informational chats with people. So it doesn't always have to be an uncomfortable event. So that's the first thing. The next thing is we want to make sure you're making effective use of your time when you go to network. So for instance, for me, when I left my full-time job and I started networking, I was going anywhere that had anything. I was going to Chamber of Commerce. I was going to these like small city meetups, women's group. I was just going everywhere. Hi, I'm a speaker and a trainer. Hi, I'm a speaker and a trainer. It was exhausting. It was a waste of time. And those weren't really the people I should have been connecting with. So you have to have a purpose behind why you're networking, and you have to be clear on that purpose when you decide what event you're going to go to. And then have a goal out of it. I'm going to go to this event. I'm going to hand out my business card to at least five people, and I'm going to set up one call with one person afterwards, and have a goal, and just make it like a game. This is the vehicle that's going to get me to better opportunities, whatever those are for you. And you have to do the work. But it can show up in different ways.
So you mentioned goals. Let's talk a little bit about how goals, having measurable goals, I think they're called like SMART goals, factor into this process.
Because I think we don't do it when we go networking. When we go networking, we just get in our car and go. And then we come home and we're like, well, that was a waste of time. Or I only talked to the person sitting right next to me. But if you are purposeful with your networking and you set a goal and you say, this is what I want out of this, it will give you intention as you walk in the door. And so whether that's, I want to meet, like currently I'm in X job, I would like to be in Y job, I'm going to try and find two people who do Y job today. And so as you're making the rounds chatting with people, and you say, let's say you want to meet a director. And so you're chatting with people, everybody in the room is a producer, nobody's a director. You can start to say, hey, listen, I'm looking to meet a director. Is there anyone in your network you could connect me to?
So I just imagine people at a networking event, like elbowing you aside, like, what, you're a manager? No, I'm looking for a director. Just joking.
Yeah. Well, I think what it is, I mean, what I want people to take away with is we think that the connection is either the person in front of us or nothing. When actually it's the person in front of us. And if they don't check the box on what you're looking for, that person in front of you has a million contacts of their own, and they could be the connection to the connection you need.
Yeah. That requires some, I feel like, some social skills that you hone over time. For example, I was at a ProMax event actually, and this guy came up and he was talking to me, and it became clear that I did not serve the need that he had for his networking. And so he just sort of abruptly said, okay, I'm going to go talk to other people now. Oh. And I was like, okay, bye. It was
but
I feel like you have to have like a smooth exit that you've got, that you figured out.
Absolutely right. It's been a joy. And here's the thing, it does require social skills, and sometimes it requires an ask. Like, for instance, I want to speak at this big HR conference that's in August. And I'm just not nailing it. I keep applying. And I know material's good. It's not getting through their screeners. And so I literally said in front of this audience that I was speaking at, and they were HR people in the audience, I said at the end of it, hey, listen, I just want to say this out to the universe. I would love to speak at the conference that's in August. And I'm not sure if any of you are on the board or know people, but I'm just putting it out there. If there's anyone out there that can help me, let me know. So I actually like said what I wanted to the group. And so I think if you treat networking as there's someone there that either is the person you need to connect to or knows the person you need to connect to, and to treat every person valuable, even if they don't serve your immediate need. So yes, requires person skills, but also requires a little bit of gumption and courage for you to be able to say, hey, listen, I was really looking to have some conversation with directors tonight. I'm so glad I met you. If it makes you think of anyone in your network that could help me, I'd appreciate the lead, right?
Yeah.
So you could say things like that.
Okay. Did you get the gig?
I haven't yet. Thank you for asking. I did have someone email me and said, I know you said this. Here's the link to apply. And I was like, well, shoot, I've already applied, but thank you. It's going to happen. But
we'll
stay
tuned.
Okay. Thank you very much.
That also mentioning the ask, I feel like the ask is very hard for people. It's hard for me to ask people, hey, I'm looking for this, or I want this, or however you're going to phrase it. I think there's probably a better way to phrase it. But how do you get from, I'm like, okay, I've gotten out the door, I'm doing the networking, to, okay, I'm actually going to make an ask?
Well, I think I'm challenged with this a lot because now I'm suddenly in a position where I'm quote unquote selling myself, and I'm not necessarily mm-hmm. comfortable with those kinds of conversations. So what I try to do is I just try to give a mental flip to it. And so you'll hear statistics like I'll get hired once every 10 conversations. Like, let's say that's the statistic. Mm-hmm. So what I'll say is I need to talk to 10 people and the first 9 are going to say no. And so it becomes kind of a numbers mind game to me. Like even when I submit a proposal, okay, well, if it comes back a no, that's okay. Cause then I'm one closer to the one that's going to come through. So it's sometimes you just have to play a little game on who you're going to meet and why you're going to meet them. And for me, I'll say you need to meet 5 people, or hey, 1 in 10 people aren't going to be 1 in 10 people are going to be right for you and your business, 10 aren't. So you've got to get 9 aren'ts out of the way tonight, you know? So I just try to flip it and set little mini goals with myself. If it takes someone out of their comfort zone. Also, having a wingman in networking helps. Mm-hmm. So we're automatically more comfortable when we attend an event with someone. And usually we can say, hey, listen, Paige, I might not be comfortable saying that I want to introduce myself as a speaker. So if we're 3 of us are chatting, if the 2 of us are chatting with someone and we're in this trio, you could take the lead. Hey, do you know my Cecilia? She's a speaker and a trainer. Do you use any of that in your business? You know, you can kind of wingman each other and do the lead in for what your guys' networking goals are.
Is there a job for wingman? Because I'm really good at that.
I think so.
Like, I'm an incredible wingman. I'm not good at doing it for myself, but I can sell anybody else.
I know. Isn't that the truth? I
think maybe a lot of us pretend like you are somebody else and sell yourself accordingly.
Absolutely. So that's why I think the mind shift comes into play is pretend you're somebody else. Look out for somebody else. I think if you had a wingman, they'd say the same thing. Oh my God, I could talk about Paige all day long. You know, it's just our nature to be more comfortable talking about others.
I think also the thing about the ask that you're saying, which you do hear if you talk to it, like my dad was a salesperson. So he certainly talked about getting the no's so that you could get to yes. I think it's true in dating too. You have to sort of get the no's so you get to yes.
Wrong.
So it is all like a little bit of a numbers game, but I think it's good to remember, you know, because I know for myself, I definitely have fear of feeling rejected, and maybe it's like Ariana Grande, like thank you next and move on.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, there's a great book called Rejection Proof that I would recommend if anybody out there is a reader. It's a fascinating study this guy did to try to get himself more comfortable hearing no. And so he asked for kind of outrageous, outlandish things once a day for 90 days, trying to get people to say no to him so he could get, so he could build that muscle up. And sometimes people said yes, and he was asking for the weirdest things too. So it's a really good read, but I think it's a muscle. You're right. You have to practice it. And for me, I always say my best gig is going to come through the next person I meet. And so I'll use that as my networking starting point. So it doesn't have to come from them, but it's going to come through them. So that's how I learn to treat every person I meet in networking, like they're the gem I was meant to meet that day.
All right. So on February 22nd, you're going to lead some lucky people in a workshop. And my understanding is this will be about LinkedIn to some extent, maybe personal branding. I don't want you to give away the whole store to come and check it out, but can you give me a little preview of what
for
that
sure.
looks like? And why is LinkedIn something that you feel is important at this point?
Yeah, for sure. So the workshop is called Building Your LinkedIn Brand. And it's a mixture of learning how to tell your story about yourself, how to leverage LinkedIn, and how that all ties into your personal brand. So we kind of cover that whole gamut. Now, I love LinkedIn and understand and try to optimize the power of it because I was a recruiter. So anytime there's a conversation about brand and hiring and applying and all that sort of thing, it really stems from if you're not on LinkedIn, if you're not telling your story in a way that's compelling, if you're not really making use of that channel, you're missing out on so many opportunities. And so I just think it's a really critical part, more than your resume, I tell people. And the reason why I say it's more important than your resume is that people can seek you out on LinkedIn 24 hours a day, all day long. Your resume, the only people that are seeing that are who you're emailing it to or submitting it to, right? So that's a smaller subset. Someone could be looking at your LinkedIn profile right this second and you have no idea, right? So the opportunity to be seen continuously is so much higher with your LinkedIn profile. So I want to make sure you're telling the right story, how it's uniquely you, how it conveys what you stand for and what you're about, and why you would be the best choice for whatever the opportunity at hand is. And then how can you leverage pieces of LinkedIn that I think a lot of people don't know all the features and functions of it. So I want people to get smarter about those.
So just as part of that response, so how important to you in this day and age is the resume and cover letter, which obviously people still call for, but I wonder how much they rely on it.
You know, I haven't been a recruiter for about 6 years, so I don't want anyone to quote me on this because I know there's so many opinions about resumes and cover letters. When I was a creative recruiter, I think that was a little bit different. So I hated cover letters. And I said, you don't need to send me a cover letter, like burn it. I don't need it. I don't want it. And I don't think that's true for all industries. So I don't like telling people that as like flat out advice. But for creative recruiting, your portfolio mattered. It mattered way more than anything you could put on paper. So I wanted to see the work that you had done. I wanted to see proof of your writing and proof of your art direction. Yeah. And that mattered more than anything. And then on your resume, I cared more about the about me section where you shared something personal about you being different than any other part of your resume. And so I want to know why Paige is an interesting person, why she's unique, why she's done, you know, interesting and different things from the next candidate. I don't want to hear that you can multitask, you're a team player and you know Microsoft Word, you know, like that kind of stuff. I don't care. Right? I just don't care about that. I want to know that, you know, you traveled abroad for 3 months or you went to Spanish immersion when you were 12. Or my favorite story is this guy who literally I called the second I read this. He said, when I was young, I was locked in a box for 24 hours and had to fend for myself or something like that, which was like, what the hell? Like, I literally had to call him. Like, what are you talking about? He goes,
I have to call you and see if I need to call the police.
And he said it so much more eloquently than I just described, but it was fascinating. And it turns out he went to a survival camp when he was a teen. And I was like, that tells me so much about you, your parents, your upbringing, your courage, your experiences than anything else on your resume could tell me. So sometimes it's in those unique parts of the resume and the LinkedIn portfolio that I think make people stand out. So formally, I don't want to kill the cover letter, but personally, I think you could be telling your story a lot better in your opening paragraphs, in your about me section, and certainly in your headline and bio on LinkedIn.
How would you say, first of all, I also want to kill the cover letter. And second of all, how does that part that you just talked about tie into your personal brand?
I'm not sure I totally understand that question. Will you ask it?
Meaning like, okay, so my personal brand is, here's my strength. Here's my weakness, for lack of a better word. Those are my guardrails. But when you're talking about, I was locked in a box when I was 12 because I was at survival camp, or yeah, I lived in France for a year or whatever. How does that tie in across the board to your personal brand where you're encapsulating it into sort of one thing that you're putting forth?
I think at the end of the day, we want to give people a dose of who you are as a person. And I think what happens on LinkedIn is we get so tied up in the vernacular, in the power words, that we forget to be authentic and we forget to say like what we're really about. So a lot of times I'll coach people to like, make sure your story on LinkedIn, the bio part, is first person. Like, here's why I love data and analytics. I've always been a numbers person. When I was a kid, it was that, like, tell what your story is. Don't say I'm a multitasker team player who's excellent at analytics. Like, everybody's going to say that. So I think the personal brand really is a level of authenticity that can show your skills and your uniqueness. And that's the part we just don't want to leave out. Want to make sure that's being told and conveyed in the right way.
Right. All right. I think that is a good place to wrap. And it also gives a nice preview of what people will get when they head to TAP, which I feel like there's a wealth to explore there, really.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, we could literally have a week-long workshop on something like this. So we're going to do the best that we can in these couple of hours to get across what people need to know. So I'm super excited for it. I'm really looking forward to serving everyone and sharing this knowledge. I think it's going to be super helpful.
All right. Well, Cecilia, thank you so much for joining me. I really appreciate it. And I took a lot of notes. It was very fascinating.
Awesome. Thanks for having me, Paige.
All right. Thank you. Bye.
Take care.
Paige Albiniak is editorial director of Promax. Andres Trujillo, Promax's social media and community manager, edited this podcast. Video Helper provides the music. Digital content producers Kate Lekeyer-Marion and Kayla Marie Hardaway contribute to Daily Brief. Although Promax is rebranding to Promax only, our social handles remain the same for now, so you can find us at PromaxBDA on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn. You can also always reach out to us at dailybrief@promax.org, and you can subscribe to the Daily Brief podcast on iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks for listening.